This episode is brought to you in part by Wholehearted Love, a new book by Caleb and Stephanie Rouse. Overcome the barriers that hold you back in your relationships with God and with others, and delight in feeling safe, seen, and loved with Wholehearted Love. For more information, go to Tyndale.com.
You're listening to the Enneagram and Marriage Podcast. I'm your host, Krista Harden, and I'm so glad you showed up for our relationship chat today, as well as for you and your people. We're all about living intentionally here so you can experience joy and balance in your relationships once again or for the very first time. Be sure you hang with us on our social media platforms, and if you like research like I do, make sure you check out our website at enneagramandmarriage.com for our weekly newsletter, freebies, and so much more, as well as at Instagram and Facebook. We have so many goodies to share with you. Let's dive right in together. Hello. Thank you so much for joining the Enneagram and Marriage Podcast. Today's very special episode features Melissa Thompson. She is a coach as well as Enneagram and Marriage certified, and perhaps most relevant to today, also certified in working with narcissism. And she is such a gift to us because not only can she help the empath who is stuck with a narcissist, she also knows how to treat NPD and has done training at the Bessel van der Kolk training as well. So I'm so grateful for Melissa to really walk with us through her gift of working with narcissism. I have to be completely honest. When my clients need help, I always send them in her direction for this because, yes, there's a human tendency of narcissism sometimes, right? But really, NPD is a deeper issue, and people are just terrified when they come with this. They're just, it's just really hard. So it is such a gift to have Melissa. And I'm always encouraging her, get your self-care because you're doing such a good job of helping so many others. So make sure you guys too, get your self-care. Continue on with us. On Wednesday, we have our new sexual instinct series going to be starting up. And that's an important one that you guys have been asking for. And I am hearing you. So we're going to start that on Wednesdays and continue our topics on Mondays. But I also have our deep dive episodes for you Wednesday. And we're reopening the collective soon too. If you're just like, I just need some time with you, Krista. I need some time with coaching and with the group. That is what we're there for too. We love to get you your self-care, your one-to-one care for your marriage, and also the group care so that you can hopefully come out well-rounded and really tracking along on your goals and your glow together too. So that is our big picture here. Check out the show notes for Melissa. And I'm going to go ahead and turn our convo over to her in a sec. I just want you to know quick background information. In the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology 2023, there was a study done that shows that men are a little bit more likely to have this issue of narcissism than women, but it's 7.7 to 4.8. So both can. If you hear Melissa reference he, that would be why we get more calls in that direction. Men, when they have it, are a little more towards the exploitative, entitlement, leadership, authoritative voice. And then women and men both do the attention seeking. So can be any personality type, any Myers-Briggs. What we all want to do is come in with more compassion, more love, more gentleness, these good features we've already been trying to put on. But now Melissa's going to help us when we're actually working with somebody who is not doing their growth work and we need the help. And I am so glad she's here to help us with that, as well as to talk about the spiritual layer too. So let's talk to Melissa. Melissa, thank you so much for joining us for the Enneagram and Marriage Podcast today.
Thank you for having me. I was very excited when you texted me about this subject and having me on here.
Thank you for taking this precious time away from your clients and your busy work.
This is part of the work, right? It's learning and it's educating and it's talking and it's validating. And so that's what we do. And so when you brought this to me as an opportunity, I was like, yes. Okay. Not that I like the subject per se, but I love to talk about it and make light of it when I can.
Oh, well, right. And it was a long time coming for somebody like me who deliberates forever, as you know. When I finally was ready, I think we've been talking about this episode for over a year. Mm-hmm. You were ready.
But I figured if it was meant to be, it would be. And when it was, God's timing, it would happen. So. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. And that's exactly what happened. And I saw it unfold and I was like, this is the perfect time. Thank you. One of your specialties, as our listeners know, because I mentioned it before you came on and they've probably heard you on your other very popular episodes here, is narcissism. And you're so gifted. You have additional trainings with Bessel van der Kolk and Peter Levine. And you have clients to where when I literally, you and I know, just a couple weeks ago, I had a client say, hey, I'm struggling. Found out he's a narcissist. I had already had the inklings. She hadn't received it yet. And you were the specialist. And she knew to ask, do you have somebody on your team who does this? And I was like, yes. And I was so happy. And I thought, with your permission, we could just start a bit with your story on why this is such a passion to you. Would that be okay?
Absolutely. I never sought out for this to be my passion, right? It kind of grew. It birthed itself, and it's something that I see such a need for, right? Our culture is saturated with narcissism. The word narcissism, and I do believe that it is flippantly used and it is overused at times, but that doesn't dismiss the fact that there are actual narcissists out there, and there's the victims that are living this dark, heart-wrenching pain and confusion that goes with dealing with narcissism. Somebody that has NPD, somebody with narcissistic traits, right? Narcissism is on a spectrum. So we have, the more vulnerable, self-aware narcissist, and then we have on the other end of the spectrum, we have the malignant, the overt narcissist, the sociopath, psychopathic type of narcissist. And then they range anywhere in between that. So not because somebody has narcissistic traits, they don't have NPD, narcissistic personality disorder. I think we all display narcissistic traits at times. And now we live in a world where it's this, right? We're on the camera all the time and we're doing videos and highlight reels and it's all about us, right? Self-promotion constantly. And so it's hard to not have a world where there's a lot of narcissistic character traits out there. So for my own story, again, like I never sought out for this to be my niche or my passion or anything like that. And I am so glad that it is, because I will try not to get emotional, but it is a huge part of my heart because I know the pain that comes with dealing with narcissism. And I see my clients come in. And now that I've overcome that, now that I have healed from that, now that I am educated, like knowledge is power, right? So now that I have educated myself and I've taken courses and I've got my work in the field that I've done, and I take that and I see these clients come in so deflated and defeated and helpless and hopeless. And I just want to like hug them and say, I promise there's a way out of this. I promise there's a way out of this. It takes time. It's not easy, especially when you are in a relationship with a narcissist. It's very hard to kind of overcome these things. First thing I do is say, educate yourself, research, start watching videos, start watching YouTube. I remember for myself, the first time I heard the word narcissist, I was like, what is that? Because I was dealing with a narcissist. And so I was like, what is that? And I remember just diving deep dive. I could not gather enough information. And what that did for me was it validated me. I wasn't the crazy one. And that's what narcissists will lead you to believe. You're sick. You need help. You're damaged. You have the problem. You need to fix yourself. And they make us feel so crazy and they distort our sense of reality in the worst way. So, why do we pick narcissists? I always say that there's the empath and the narcissist dance, right? Narcissistic dance. And you really can't have one without the other because they feed off of each other. I am an empath. But empaths are created, and usually they're created because of trauma from their childhood. We learn to assess the world around us because that gives us safety. We read people all the time and their energies, facial expressions, micro expressions, their body movements, tone, what they say, what they don't say. We're constantly assessing that so that we can feel safe. Right? There's a reason for that. It's because we grew up in dysfunction and chaos and abuse and neglect and addiction or whatever that may be. And so the empath is created that way, but so is the narcissist. The narcissist is created because they're dealing with abuse and neglect and abandonment, big T's, little T's. And it may be that they're experiencing it personally by their caregivers, their parents, whatever it may be. or they're watching it, right? They are sitting watching all of this happen to somebody within their internal family, and their message they say to themselves is, I will never be controlled. Nobody will ever make me feel that way. I will never be wrong, and nobody will ever tell me that I'm wrong. I will be perfect in every way. And then there's also no accountability. There's also the part of that where the narcissist has no accountability growing up. They're allowed to do whatever they want, and there's no humility taught, there's no accountability taught, there's no boundaries. So therefore they think they're entitled to everything and anything that they want, and they will mistreat people and nobody's going to tell them any different. So, that's where they kind of the narcissism kind of falls on that continuum of the spectrum. And so I like to share my story, not with everybody. It's when it's appropriate, right? With my clients and different things. And I help teach a woman's self-defense course. So I teach a little, I talk a little bit about my story in there as well.
One of my
But
daughter's friends took your course and she's like, Melissa is awesome.
I loved it when they took that course and she was a beast. I was so
Yeah, I
proud of
love
her
it.
for doing that. Kind of timid at first, but just like unleashed that. And I was so proud to see her do that. So one of the reasons why I share a little bit of my story is because what it does is it takes people from like a timeline of why we choose the empath, why we choose the narcissist. And one of my favorite quotes is, the nervous system will pick a familiar hell over an unfamiliar heaven, right? That's uncomfortable to us. Safety to me, a person that was stable, right? That was logical. That was so uncomfortable to me. And so that was boring, right? My brain needed the highs and lows because of the way that I grew up and what I grew up in. My brain, that was that trauma brain. It needed the high, the low, just like a drug addict, right? We don't want that. We don't look for that. But it's what our brain is conditioned and hardwired for. We don't know calmness. That calmness place is very awkward for us. And so growing up, as you know, my biological father, he was a drug addict and he was a drug dealer and he was always getting in trouble with the law, with SWAT teams and police coming to our home gun pointed. And this was me from birth to, till I was a toddler-ish. And they had a very tumultuous relationship. And so my mother and my father did because of this. He ended up leaving when I was about three-ish or so. And my mom remarried, and he adopted me when I was in second grade. And I remember feeling like my dad, my biological father, even though I didn't understand the depth of how sick he was going to come and fight for me. He was going to save me. He was going to fight for me. And he didn't. He signed me right off. And I remember being devastated. I was thrown away like a piece of trash, right? That was his moment to show me that he loved me. Because as a little girl, I thought he never fights for me. He's never around. He's not a part of my life. What did I do wrong for him to not love me? Because children were very self
Take it on.
inward thinking. Everything is about us. And so not realizing that he was the one that was sick. And so, and I remember that. Like I still remember vividly. I was devastated that he didn't fight for me. And they were celebrating. And I remember even kind of being like sad about it. And I was kind of brought up to me like, this is a good thing. This is a good thing, right? And I remember being just soul crushed by this discard, right? What I viewed as a discard. Now I see it as a blessing, right? That he wasn't a part of my life. And then my father, he was abusive to me in every way possible. And so that was a way that I grew up like always on eggshells. My boundaries were never honored. They were always crossed. And so growing up in that, I didn't know what a healthy relationship was. And so I did meet somebody that was healthy when I was young, and I self-destruct sabotaged that relationship because it was healthy. And I had no idea what my emotional injuries were, my trauma at that point. So I self-sabotaged that relationship, and it was too safe and it was too boring. And I remember saying, can we just fight about something sometimes? And
Just
that's
when
how
my
my
cortisol
brain
spiked.
needed that high and low, and I wasn't getting it. And so then I fell into another relationship, and this relationship was controlling and entitled and prestigious and I'd give you the world and love bombing, right? That love bombing that narcissists do, right? They'll give you the world. They're the best. You're the best of the best. They want to hear everything that you have to say. They mirror you so that one of my dearest friends, I remember her saying one time to me, you didn't fall in love with them. You fell in love with yourself because they mirror you. They mirror everything about you to create that instant bond. And then everything from there is intoxicating and it's intense and it's passionate. Everything, whether it's eating, watching TV, having sex, whatever it is, it's extreme, right? So that hooks the empath. Like, this person's mirroring me. They give me everything I need. They hear me. They see me. Everything that they go over in abundance with everything that they do. That's to get us hooked and addicted to them. So that to me, because of my past, was comfortable. That was the familiar hell for me. The relationship that I had been in before that was the unfamiliar heaven. And I didn't know what to do with that. Didn't. So this, I fell in, I was like, ah, this is what I know. This represents my father. This represents this. This is comfortable to me. And so that's what happens with a lot of the narcissistic or narcissist victims. Is they've got father or mother injuries and they have other relational injuries and different things like that. And they prey. They are predators. Narcissists are predators and they prey on the victim. They prey on the vulnerable. They prey on the broken. They prey on the weak. They prey on the caring and the giving and the soft-hearted people because they know they're going to rope them in. They know that they can get them addicted to that. And they can take somebody, an empath that is strong and independent and, forward focused, goal focused, right? And they can get in a relationship with that person and they little by little, they love bomb them. They hook them in. This is like nothing they've ever experienced before, right? And then they start the devaluing, right? They start to take away those little things that they gave you and they know what they're doing. And it's so that we can go, what's wrong with me? What's did I do something wrong? Why are they not leaving those love notes for me anymore? Why am they not texting me every day like they've done for the last 3 to 6 months?
Six
It's
months.
right at the beginning sometimes. And I've seen victims that were in a relationship for 30 years because the first 2 to 3 months was that love bombing phase. And we so want that person back. We know they're there. We've seen them. And they throw us bones. They
That
throw
makes
us dog bones through the relationship because as we pull away and they devalue, then they throw us a little bone and that love bombing person comes back. And we're like, oh, yes, breakthrough. And so they keep
breadcrumbing.
giving, yes, they keep giving that false hope and that holds us on to this person for so long. And so that is kind of where my story comes into play. Is that I grew up in that. I had the healthy relationship. I ruined that healthy relationship because it was safe and it was boring to me. And then I fell victim to an unhealthy relationship because that was familiar to me. And so that's kind of the cycle of what happens for us. And then all the in-between stuff when you are with a narcissist.
Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry you had to walk that journey. And I really get that you would never have pictured yourself to be an expert on it. But because this is your journey, you're using it to help others and you yourself cut free.
I did, and I do want to use what I've been through. What's the point of going through all that if I'm just going to harbor it and hold on to it? And I don't want to stay. That keeps me a victim, and I don't want to be a victim. I'm not a victim, and I'm going to empower the victims that are out there. And I say I'll stop at nothing to do it.
Yes, and I'm glad, and I've seen this, and it's beautiful. Now we have a few indicators you're going to tell us, I hope, the definition of narcissism, tendencies that we might want to watch out for in ourselves or others.
The red flags, right? And a lot of times we'll, as victims, we'll say, I didn't see this coming, right? But that's not true. We do. We do see it coming. We choose to ignore it. We choose to normalize it. We choose to justify it because the love bombing part is so extreme. that we want that part. So we're willing to ignore some of the red flags. Well, he's drinking too much, or he's looking at other women, or they're looking at porn, or they're this or they're that, right? So we might choose to kind of ignore some of that because we want the good. So some of the red flags of narcissism, excessiveness, right? So in the beginning of a relationship, it happens really fast. And again, they're predators. They're looking for their prey. So they want to hook you in. Extreme texting, a lot of calling. Like at the beginning of meeting somebody, you just don't need to have that connection with somebody, right? You live your life, you guys live, they live their life. And then you have like that autonomy, that independence, right? To come into that and share things here and there. But you don't know this person. I'm not going to tell you my everyday stuff. But a narcissist wants that. A narcissist wants every day. Right, they want to hook you in. We're going to text. Why aren't you texting me? This is what I, and you know, the other thing they do is they tell you what they're looking for. So they set you up in a way so that you don't fail them. So let's say you meet a narcissist and they're going to say, you know, I really love a clean house. I love it when I'm living with somebody and I love for them to be clean. The empath is like, clean house, clean house. Okay, so if this ever goes anywhere and gets serious, I'm make sure to keep a very spotless, clean house for them so they're happy, right? I like somebody that keeps themselves lean and works out and takes care of their body. Oh, okay. I got to make sure to hyper focus on working out now like crazy and making sure that my appearance is acceptable to them. And it's a lot of things like that. They'll throw those things out to you, so that you're starting to prepare for that. I want somebody that I can talk to every day. I want somebody that's going to give me a massage. I want somebody like they're letting you know what they want. And so slow down. Step back. You shouldn't be texting somebody you've just met all day long, every single day. You shouldn't be talking on the phone with them all day long or every single day. And the other thing they do is if you don't respond to them, they start to kind of make you feel guilty for that. I'm not important to you. Are you too busy? Like, how come you don't have time for me? Right? They start to throw out those little innuendos of like, you're disappointing me. And that makes us want to step up and say, oh, okay, well, then I better make sure. Oh my gosh, they just texted me. Excuse me. I have to respond to this. Right? Then there's that fear that they start to instill in us, like, because we want their approval, right? The twos, right? The heart triad. Like, we want love and self-worth and approval. And so if we don't realize we're in this unhealthy place or that there's these red flags or we're like dealing with a predator, we're going to do whatever that predator, narcissist, grandiosity person wants
Right. And I think
to
of that FJ, which we talked about on the Myers-Briggs.
yeah.
And I will empathize with your feelings so much. And that's a lot
Yes.
too. So the heart
Yes.
types and some of the FJs out there
Very much so. Very
can be the
much
victim.
so. And yes. And so that's where kind of some of those red flags come in. The other thing they'll start to do is they build you up, but then they give you backwards compliments. So then you're sitting there, like you might hear something like, you're so beautiful, but what's it like to be getting older? Are you going to, age gracefully? Or, wow, you work out a lot. That's so great. But how come your waist isn't smaller, right? So then they say these kind of things where you're like, yeah, wait a sec, wait a minute, that doesn't sit right. But you can't say anything because then,
It was couched so carefully, too.
oh yeah, they know how to play on their words so that if you do question them on it, they're like, that's not what I meant. That's not, no, you're taking that all wrong, right? So then that's where kind of the gaslighting starts. Yes. So that would be some of the indicators to look out for, right? Jealousy, possession, insecurity. I don't want you talking to any other guys. You're not allowed to have any guy friends. Take guys off your social media. I've had somebody go so far that I dated for a little bit that literally stalked all my social media and was taking screenshots of me liking a guy's friend post or a public comment. I'm like, this isn't appropriate. You shouldn't be doing this. What are you doing behind my back? Right. So then they start to kind of throw in those kind of things. So the power and control wheel is really important to look at and like just all the red flags. So we just want to be careful of that. And I always say, if something feels off about somebody, it's off. And we really need to learn to trust that gut instinct that we have, because as women, we question it all the time. I'm making it up. I'm being overdramatic. And that's what we don't want to do in this relationship with this person that's love bombed us, that we've never had anything like this. The last thing we want to do is question what they're doing and create that fight. So we just kind of ignore that instinct that something's off, kind of a feeling. I
This
see what you
reminds me of a lot of things that can happen even within the church sometimes, because
Yes.
it can be like, you're supposed to do this, you better be perfect. And it's never meant in that way. It's just a sense of, like you said, sometimes there's a painful system or person who isn't even aware they're doing it, but it's super toxic to the person that's the victim of it. And so just you saying, be mindful of systems and people that are giving you a check in your spirit, because if it feels off, it is off. And some of us are higher in intuition than others. So it's good for people to hear some of these tangible things that can show up for us. Can you tell us any of the, is there anything to distinguish, like when it becomes a personality disorder and it's, I think our audience may know this, but to reference this for them, if it's personality disorder level, it's a lot harder for this narcissist to change. Do you have a sense for where they can find those guidelines about determining whether it's a personality disorder or maybe something within their relationship that's a little more workable?
Well, thankfully, narcissism is huge. The information out there for it is huge. The DSM-5 would state that NPD is a personality disorder, and that really a malignant and an overt narcissist, they have, though the key component that they miss is the ability to have empathy. They can mirror the empathy. They can do what is socially acceptable and appropriate to look like they have empathy. They learn that. But one of the key things, and so what does that look like? That looks like, so I might be going off a tangent here, but I think this component is really important. And when I've said this to people, they're like, "Were you in the room with me when I was fighting with my narcissist?" Right? So one of the things that happens with the empath and the narcissist in the gaslighting, the spiritual abuse, which I would love to touch on a little bit too, is that we have to think and plan. Like we start to, they condition us to know you can't bring anything to me, because their trauma, their emotional injury, their wounds are so deep, right? They can't handle any kind of criticism from us whatsoever. So as soon as we come to them with an issue, we've just rewounded them again. They do not have the capability to hear what we have to say. Right. So there's an immediate deflection, projection, victimization, blaming, right? They change the whole subject. And so often what I'll say is for the empath, they condition us to know this because they don't want us to go to them with our with problems or hurts or issues that we have. So they train us to not do that little by little by little. And so we get to the point where to try to talk to them about something that hurts us or bothers us takes days, right? We perfect words because we want to be so delicate with how we bring it up to them. We have to wait for the weather to be perfect, right? We have to wait for their mood to be good, for them to be free to see that they're engaging with us. So we wait for this opportune moment. But in the meantime, we're planning the perfect words, rehearsing it over and over and over. We're also fretting. And when that time comes, we're like, okay, I see an opportunity here to talk to them about this, right? Our heart is racing, our mouth is dry, our hands are sweating, right? We're shaking because we know instinctively, even though we're so hopeful that there'll be an opportunity and for change, we also know that it's going to become a storm. As soon as we bring that up to them, right, we try to talk to them, then they start deflecting, and then they start blaming us, and they start telling us we're crazy and that didn't happen, or that we need to go get help. And then they start bringing up things that may have happened in the past that they're blaming us for. And so we're literally sitting there in this like tornado going, what just happened? And they walk off. We're upset. We get to the point where we lose it. We're crying, we're shaking, whatever. And they sit back and go, look at you. You're crazy. You need to go get help. And they walk off. And we literally sit there thinking, oh, what's wrong with me? What is wrong with me? He's right. Maybe I did do something wrong. They do that so that we think about it and then we go back to them and apologize for what they did wrong because we brought it up. Right. So that happens a lot. And so that's super huge. And the other component that they bring into it is spiritual abuse. And that is so damaging. And
So
I
prevalent.
was a little plug here for the Rise and Fall of Mars Hill, and I was listening to that. And the what grabbed me in was first line on the trailer teaser, and it was a woman speaking, and I don't remember her name. But what she said was, when a pastor or a therapist, counselor, coach, or anybody, right, the abuser brings God into that conflict, then for the victim, now God is on the abuser's side. And that is so damaging to the victim, especially a victim that is like, my faith is strong. God is a huge part of my life. Thank God, right? Because he walked me through and held me and caught my tears in so many dark moments. But that one safe thing that we have, right? That abuser comes in and now turns God against us and puts God on their side. And that is so confusing and so damaging. And they'll say things like, oh, I don't know if God would want you talking like that. You might need to read the words. They bring God in. And pastors do this a lot of times. And church is a wonderful place. It's a place to learn about God. It's a place to fellowship with other believers, right? Like-minded believers. But there is a lot of spiritual abuse that happens. And I truly believe that's because pastors do not understand the depth and the damage that these narcissists do, because these narcissists go to church and they put on the show, right? They are good Christian men or good Christian women, and they're leading and they're doing this and the shaking the hands and giving the hugs, and they even volunteer, right? Because that makes them look good. It makes them feel good. They get the pats on the back. That's what narcissists want anyways, the accolades. That's what everything is about for them. But so, you know, I've been in church and I've listened to a pastor sit up there and say, turn the cheek. Right? 70 times seven, we have to forgive. God hates divorce. And yes, he does hate divorce, right? It destroys, it breaks up a family. But God also hates abuse. And God has a blueprint of how a husband is to treat his wife and how a wife is to treat her husband. And when you're in an abusive relationship, it doesn't fall in the guidelines of that blueprint at all. And that is not God's design. But we have faith and we don't want to disappoint God. So we stay in these abusive relationships because of the guilt, because we don't want to disappoint him, because we're supposed to forgive and be the bigger, better person. And that God is going to love, and I am not an advocate for divorce by any means, but God loves us no matter what we decide to do. And that
Oh
does
my
not.
gosh, thank you. Yes, I've had to mention that to clients so many times. God loves you more than your marriage certificate. He has talked to even specific examples for us biblically, for those who share our faith, to see this is a woman he's talking to who's been married 5 times, and yet he still wants to bring her life. It's not about that for God. It's about us with him. And I love that you just shared that. Unfortunately, we don't always get that message. So hopefully we're educating pastors and spiritual leaders and directors right now too, who may be just more familiar with the anecdotal narcissistic training. Like you said, there's a lot of information out there, but not all of it is good. And that's why I love that you've done some of your work with, like I said, under Bessel van der Kolk, Peter Levine. These are our somatic experts out there. Body keeps the score. Like, you know that you're getting good information with Melissa here. What do we do when we are tempted to have that experience of freezing or fawning? We know, as we mentioned, this is the typical stance for a heart type. And also, I am an F on the Myers-Briggs. And so, for any of us who's a feeler versus a thinker, we may tend toward that sometimes. And my son did it the other day. And I was just like, oh my gosh. Like, and I talked to Wes, I said, we have 3 FJs for kids. We have to work on this. So, what can we do when we find ourselves in that freeze or fawn?
Well, we find ourselves in that freezer fawn. That's like a self-preservation. It's actually a coping mechanism, right? It's like that escape for us. We shut down. We're trying to find safety. And so I think that self-awareness is important, right? Learning like what we're feeling at that time. And normally when, you know, when our amygdala is going off and those alarms are going off, we're not thinking logically. The prefrontal cortex has gone offline, right? And when we've lived in a lot of trauma, you know, our amygdala is hyperdeveloped and our prefrontal cortex is underdeveloped. They don't read each other, they don't balance each other out. And so I think it's super important. Like I teach my clients even that to be aware. Like, let's think of our brain as a computer, right? When we're dealing with trauma and we get triggered and our nervous system is trying to, it goes into that fight or flight or fawn response, right? Like, let's Take a breath. Let's be aware for a second, because let's do hand to heart, like that self-soothing feeling, right? That connection that we have with our body, right? And sometimes we're in the heat of the argument with a narcissist. We just want to retreat. We want to freeze. We want to fawn. And so it's honestly, it's better than trying to engage with a narcissist and argue and try to prove your point and defend yourself. And that does happen a lot with a narcissist. And I think when we're engaging and there's that conflict, I think what's vital to understand when you're in a relationship with a narcissist of any kind, whether it be work, family, friendship, romantic, you're never going to win with a narcissist. They won't let you win. And so the best thing I can say is let it go and give them nothing. Don't let them know what you're thinking or feeling because they will use that against you. But the freeze on effect is definitely, it's again, it's that self-preservation that we fall into. And that is common in that type of relationship, in a toxic relationship like that.
Okay, so it's building that up, your beautiful self-defense classes. So taking self-defense classes where people are getting good counseling and coaching, which you do virtually too, which is amazing, right?
I do virtual, I do phone, I do virtual FaceTime, Zoom, in office, whatever is convenient for my clients all over the world. I'm thankful that I have met with clients all over the world and within our country and state. So that's.
And you also even support through your social media handles if you want to share any of those.
I've got Facebook and I've got Instagram and I've got TikTok.
And those are in the show notes too, so that's helpful.
Okay, perfect.
Oh my
So
gosh.
yes, I like to put out information, but I also do a lot of funny stuff to kind of make light of a very heavy, dark topic to make it relatable for people.
Oh, because you know they're already going through such a hard time.
Yes, very much so. And they feel like there's no way out, and they really feel the victims usually feel very crazy, and they feel like they're losing it, and their whole world has been turned upside down. The sense of reality that they have about themselves and who they are, and they truly think that there is something wrong with them. I had somebody say to me one time, remember, you're not crazy. You left the crazy. So, it's true. We are enablers, and that's a whole different topic. And so we're codependent, whole another topic. But usually when that, that just kind of like strengthens those reins when we're in a relationship with a narcissist. So one of the things I think is really important, one of the things that I ask my clients a lot of times is we want to get to like the root of their trauma story first. What is the root? What is your story? And after that, it is what is leading you to end up with people like this? Why are you ignoring the red flags? Why are you ignoring your gut instinct? Why do you have a high tolerance for that inappropriate behavior? And that's what, my counselor had told me years ago, and she gave me permission to say her name, Dr. Sharon Otis. And I thought I had big shoulders, and I thought I had a big heart, and I thought I was very forgiving, and I was very proud of that because I could keep tolerating all this abuse. And I thought the right thing to do. And she looked at me one day and said, "No, you have a high tolerance for inappropriate behavior." And that was like an uppercut to my gut, and it knocked the wind out of me. And for a week, I was mad at her. And I went back, and I'm like, "I have been mad at you all week." And she was like, "I know.
I
She
love
said, "Good,
her.
because it made you think about it." But she was right. She was right. I had a high tolerance for inappropriate behaviors, but I was conditioned and groomed for that my whole life. So of course I was going to have a high tolerance for their inappropriate behaviors of me, because it was something I had to fix.
My gosh, that's so good and so helpful for people to be sitting with that. And even if your temperament, where you're hanging out in an unhealthy part of your personality, you might be checked to the heart in a good way today, where you're like, I've been too picky about this for this. I've been too demanding. I've been making my spouse walk on eggshells. And I like that Melissa understands that there's a depth for you too to work on yourself. And I think you do want narcissists to work on themselves too. Am I right? This is a deep-seated personality disorder. Don't hold your breath for change on
Don't
that
hold
one.
your breath. Don't keep hoping for it. Praying is good, yes. And God will do anything He wants in that person. That person has to want it. And a lot of times they don't, because they don't have the ability to look at their internal wounds, to look at their past. They glorify everything, grandiose everything, glorify everything. Everything's perfect usually. And so they don't have the ability to look inward to say, wow, I've got some trauma work I need to heal and to work on. Everything happens.
And
Never
that
gonna happen.
doesn't mean they don't have value before God, but it means you don't want to be in a relationship with that person.
They're my favorite Bible verse is Titus 3. Warn a divisive person once, then warn them again. And after that, have nothing to do with them. So the Bible gives us a blueprint of how to deal with divisive, abusive, destructive people. And so that I love that Bible verse because it's giving permission to these people, to us that have this faith that we feel so guilty, but not even the faith. There's other people that just are so loyal and dedicated. They're going to stick through no matter what. It's not always, that's not good for you. It's not always good for us. And yes, narcissists are loved by God. They are children of God. They are loved by God. But here's what I tell my clients: let God deal with them. They're not your responsibility. They're not your
Which is so good
responsibility.
for a two who's like, I'm God's right hand. And you're like, correct, you're not God.
No, let God take care of them. They are God's responsibility. You go over here and you start healing you,
Oh my
right?
goodness. Oh my gosh. And I hear you saying any personality type, any gender, it's anyone can have enough abuse or trauma in their life to have fallen into either of these spectrums. But if you have a narcissist in your life, get them help and get yourself help. And if they're an NPD, get out of there. Let God
Yes.
have them.
Yes, because a narcissist will go with you. Narcissists get help because they're forced to get help. They don't go because, oh, you know what? I have a problem and I think I need to deal with this. That's not going to happen. They're forced. They're given an ultimatum. They're put up against a wall and they're forced to go in to get help. And they'll usually go in for one or two sessions and then they're out of there. Like they're like, this is, I'm not going to have
Hard to
somebody.
work with.
Right.
We've talked about
So.
that.
But
So
it's
hard to
also
work with.
as our position, we're walking in a lot of trauma and suffering with our clients. And so, as coaches and therapists and counselors, anybody in the mental health field, we also have to kind of step back and, kind of look at it that from that way too. Like these people are coming in, and narcissists are deeply wounded, right? So we have to take a moment to like regulate our nervous system, right, before we go into session with them, because otherwise we get triggered, and those triggers are, passiveness and quietness or anger and defensiveness, right? And so we have to
They
be
cross
really careful,
boundaries.
right? But we have to be really careful that we are regulating ourselves, like settling our nervous system, our vagal, before we go in there so that we can look at them with compassionate eyes, because them triggering us, that does not help them and it does not help us,
My
right?
gosh. So to hear that church leaders, hear that people who are counselors, coaches, and that's why we also love our inner circle times. And I love my local time with you because we have to do our decompressing. And that's so helpful, Melissa. I know we're ending, but thank you. I love that we have your contact info. I know this is going to be life-giving conversation. We cannot thank you enough for your time here today.
Well, thank you. I wish we could do this for like 3 hours. Like I have so much to say
Oh
on
my
this.
gosh, you guys, maybe
So
we need to
crazy.
look at that sometime. I'll be listening. Audience members, tell us if you want more of this and we'll be very excited to serve it up, right?
I got lots to say. I have so much to say about this subject.
Ari, thank you, friend, and guys, contact her. All
Thank you,
right.
Crystal, so much for having me on.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay, well, thank you so much for tuning in. I hope this episode has really opened your eyes to what you can do if you're feeling stuck. And I also hope you'll take one tip to just grow with from today. You see, Melissa's got everything you need in the show notes, and we're so happy to help you on your journey. Thank you so much for tuning in today. Cannot wait to open the collective next Monday and also talk to you Wednesday for our Sexual Instinct series. Okay, see you then. Bye-bye.
Thank you again for listening with us. It was so wonderful to have you. I love knowing we're doing this journey together, not perfectly, but with love, grace, and hopefully some fun too. If you love today's episode, make sure you leave us a 5-star review at Apple Podcast or Spotify so others can find it too. Visit our show notes so you can get all the links from today's show, as well as enneagramandmarriage.com, the Instagram, the Facebook, and all over the place. Make sure you spread the word. Love living intentionally with you. Bye-bye.